Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Lowe's has all the supplies you need to get your home spring ready, inside and out. Shop Ego, the number one rated brand in cordless outdoor power. Plus, renew for the season with select cleaning essentials for under $10. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
We have everything you might want for the end of winter. Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
Welcome to the Goodish Girls, guys. My name is Dallas, and today I have with me the wonderful author, Juliet Cross. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank y'all so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
I'm so excited. We are here to talk about her epic fantasy novel, Firebird.
Okay,
so
great.
So when we're talking Firebird in the Fire That Binds series. Right now, book one is out. Book two is coming soon. So as our listeners know, I will be asking some fun questions.
Yeah.
Getting
so
some information.
I'm so excited for Bloodsinger.
Yes, exactly. I want to talk really quick about the book itself and kind of what your inspiration was. So it's, again, it's a reimagining of the Roman Empire, right? Not one of historical accuracy, as you have said in the book. On literally page one, you let us know. You were like, hey, this is not real life. This is
You're
going to
see it again in the third author's note, like in the second and the third.
Exactly.
Like I don't want historians coming after me because I did,
hodgepodge
some of things from history together as I needed, you know, for the story. But so I mean, I will say, you know, I've always been fascinated by, you know, Roman civilization, Greek civilization. Like, I love ancient myths. I love ancient civilizations in general. But what fascinates me about Rome, and that's what served the story, this to tell the story of it's Melina and Julian, is that Rome is, it's such a juxtaposition. On one hand, we have this really sophisticated culture. We have philosophers and artists, and I mean, you know, they have indoor plumbing, you know, and heated floors and all of these things. But on the other side, they're invading and conquering and enslaving people across the world. So they're using this power, this greater power and this greater wealth that they have to dominate and, you know, cause suffering and enslave others just for their own gain. And so, you know, that's what the crux of the story is. You know, I needed Melina to be inside those walls of Rome. You know, because it's one thing if she's, you know, she's stationed and she's living outside the walls and she hears about the horrors of Rome. And I don't think I'm spoiling it too much because this happens super, super early in the prologue. We learned that she is, you know, her village was invaded and then she was captured and, you know, later on and all this other kind of stuff. But I think it didn't make sense for me to have Melina on the outside looking in. I needed her inside to know what people are really suffering in there, because the story, the overarching theme for the whole, all three books is about a free Rome, you know, killing our oppressors, which is great in romantasy. You know, we don't just have to do away with them. We're just going to kill them. You know, we have to remove them and create a whole new world. So that is really part of the fantasy aspect beyond the dragons is that, you know, and it's really these three women, these mystical women that are going to make that happen.
Well, that's incredible. And not only does she need to take a look inside it, she also needed, in my opinion, to see that not everybody that was in those walls was truly bad, right? We know there are some that are bad,
right?
We know, like, the emperor, a lot of the other generals, like a lot of the dragon shifters, a lot of people there, but not everybody. So I think it was really important and really imperative for her to go into those walls and see what it was really like.
Right. And I think, you know, I probably borrowed from history subconsciously, you know, from World War II, from, you know, the Nazi Germany and like all of these other times in history where you've seen this happen, where a people was led astray by a dictator, a leader, and the people had to fight back, you know? And so,
Yeah, that's fair. And another question that kind of leads into this was, as you were writing this story, was it ever hard as an author, as a woman, as someone who lives, you know, in the state of the world that we live in right mm-hmm. now, was it ever hard right. to draw that line between the story that you were writing and real life history? Was there ever a time where you were like, ooh, this feels a little too real? Or did you really just put it all in there?
No, I really wanted to, if I was going to take a risk, I wanted to take the risk, you know, yeah. I mean, it is history that guided this. It is the history of, you know, a dominant patriarchy who abused people and mm-hmm. caused so much suffering, you know, while at the same time being this glorified empire that guided my story. I think to step away from it and be like, well, you know, the dictator's not so bad, you know, like he's kind of a good guy. No. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, he's actually Iniculus, the emperor in the story, is fashioned after Caligula. And if you know any Roman history at all, he was a heinous, horrible person, you know, who was in charge for a short time because he was assassinated. You know, it's interesting you asked me that because I have a really good friend, Naima Simone's like, you know, damn, when you go there, like, she's like, I mm-hmm. always like that you don't shy away from the scary parts. And I'm like, I didn't think about it in those terms. I just knew that if I was going to tell a true story about, you know, finding freedom, creating a new world and doing away with the patriarchy, then I had to go there. You know, I had to go into the darker places.
As an author, I would assume that you, and from other authors that I've spoke to in the past as well, you know what's going to happen at the end, right?
Yes. Yes.
Like, so even when you're writing that, you're like, it's okay. We're gonna get out of this. It's not going to be bad forever. Like, it's bad right now, but we will make it through. So I would think that would help ease the writing process.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I knew. Now, of course, I don't know all the exact details, but I'm definitely what they call a plotter. And in romantasy, I like to know how the very last book is going to end. You know, I need to know what's going to happen there. And I did know the entire time before I wrote it, which I recently wrote that scene, and it was awesome to write.
Nice.
But, 100%. I've kind of known where it's going to go the whole time. And mm-hmm. I guess that does give me a little bit of safety because I know it's going to all end well.
Right.
Maybe not everybody's going to survive, but, you know, all the main characters will for sure. Because this is a romance,
all right.
After all. It's like, this is a romance, so they have to survive.
That's incredible. Speaking of plotting, it takes me into your world building. The map is huge. It's a big map.
It is.
And did you have any difficulty building the world of Draconis?
No. I mean, and I didn't really have so world building is my favorite thing. It is my favorite thing to do. You know, creating a magic system and creating a world is my favorite part because I really thrive when I can just kind of like let my imagination go. So mm-hmm. that was the fun part, like reimagining the gods, like retelling Medusa's story, which of course I've always wanted to do. So that was really exciting to be able to retell Medusa where she isn't punished for being mm-hmm. violated in the temple, but she is given a power, you know, to protect herself. You know,
like pay it forward too.
Right.
Yeah.
We know a man wrote that original myth, right? I mean.
Oh, yes. Justice for Medusa every day of the week.
Right. Exactly. So those parts were really rather easy. It was more difficult confronting the history, you know, historical mm-hmm. aspect of it, I would say.
Yeah. So in your writing process, do you have it as like a typed list or do you have some people have a whiteboard where they write down all the names? Like, did you when you were naming everything and kind of laying it all out, what was that inspiration for you as well? Or how close was that to the real life maps that we have? And I have no knowledge of any maps, so I have nothing to refer it to.
Yeah. Well, the maps actually taken from an ancient Roman map. So those places actually did exist. And I knew I needed to be pretty big because I knew in book 3, they were going to kind of go over to Dalmatia, which is modern day Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, just lay that out there. That happens later. And Dacia is modern day Romania, you know, so that mm-hmm. was farther on the northern side. But then I also knew, you know, I knew at the end of book 1, we were going to venture over to Britannia and cross Hispania and everything. So, I mean, I would just say that, like, I don't want to say that it's easy, but it's easier for me to do the mm-hmm. creative world building than it is to wind the more difficult aspects of history into it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it was really interesting to me. And I did audiobook it. I'm glad I audiobooked it because when I looked at it, was hard for me as just a reader in of myself, mm-hmm. understanding the words. And I think a lot of readers do struggle with that as well. And in a lot of fantasy books.
Right. About, yeah.
Or books in general.
Yeah. And there's a lot of Latin.
Kind of skims over. Yeah.
There's a lot of Latin in it. Yeah. So, well, not a lot, but enough to kind of throw things, you know, yeah. be a little
so
bit more difficult
if,
to read.
You know, for our listeners and for your readers as well, if you are someone that struggles with really understanding or comprehending how things are pronounced or how things mm-hmm. are written, the audiobook did such a wonderful job enunciating and showing
us. I love my narrators.
What it was. They were fabulous. When I was listening to it, I was like, this makes it so much easier for my brain to absorb it all. So even like, I think an immersive read is really a good choice for this book specifically as well,
yeah.
to read it while you listen to it. So not only are you hearing the pronunciations, you're seeing mm-hmm. them at the same time. And I think that yeah. is something that I would, if I was going to read it all over for the first time again, that's what I would choose to do.
Yes. And Blair and Kale, the two narrators, they're just great actors, voice actors. They really mm-hmm. do bring the characters to life. They just do a phenomenal job. And I couldn't be happier with how things are going with Bloodsinger and how some reviewers are feeling about it. So I'm really excited.
Yay. Oh, you answered my question too. Like if they're, you know, on Audible, I can see that they're coming back. I did look. I said, are they coming back for book two? Because yeah. in book two, they're different main characters. So I was wondering which direction you were going to go. So that's very exciting. You also answered another yeah. one of my questions on, you know, are we going to be exploring more places on the map? So you answered for book
yes.
three, which I love. In
okay.
book two, where are we thinking or where can you tell us where we're going in that map? Are we staying in some of the same locations?
We'll begin in Rome and we will end somewhere else. We will cross different territories than you were in the first book. But I really
okay, so maybe some newer areas.
Little, uh-huh. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Sure.
Okay. And then speaking of book two as well, so we have, you know, Melina and Julian in book one.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What is next for this pair? Because they are not the stars of the show as far as I have heard.
No.
Two. So what should we expect for them?
Okay. Well, you're definitely going to see them. Think readers are going to be very happy when we see them because of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we're slowly doing some healing for the sisters, you know, between book one and book two. And I will say that Leela has had the most difficult time since her wedding night was mm-hmm. spoiled by the Romans who attacked their village. So, and I will say, I feel like book two is like much more emotional
mm-hmm.
in that regard. And Melina brings some light to the scenes that she's in. And I'm just going to say, like, obviously in book three, they're not gone either. They're going to return as well because that's going to be the big finale, you know, so.
Yeah. So are we, and you don't have to answer this if you're not ready yet. In book three, are we anticipating a third set? So you have original
yes.
and the sister and then maybe the
yep.
other sister.
Yeah. They're interconnected
right.
standalones.
And yeah.
Actually, you should be getting some news fairly soon on book three because we've been talking description copy and
mm-hmm.
I just sent that to my editor this morning. And then also they're working, Carlos Quevedo is working on the cover and I cannot wait because I think it is going to be my favorite because of some of the elements that I have requested and hope they're going to show up on it.
So, I'm very yeah. excited to see it. Yeah, the when I was walking to the bookstore many, many moons ago, like way before you and I even met at Romanticism Con, any of that stuff, I remember walking past it and seeing the book and going,
yeah.
That is stunning. I stopped my husband. I said, what is this book? I was not
oh
a book
gosh.
By the end. I was not a book.
Oh, yeah.
We were just looking. But I was
just
like,
looking.
I like that one. So yeah, I don't think I put it in there, but if you would like to talk about the inspiration behind the design of that cover, it is truly stunning.
Okay, so I have to give credit to a lot of credit to Monique Patterson, who is she originally was my editor over this series, and she so we were working together on the cover, and she's like, "Well, I was thinking about Carlos Quevedo. How do you feel about that?" I'm like, "Oh my God, yes!" Like I've always admired his work. He's a fantastic artist. Other people might recognize he did Crescent City covers, so you know, for Sarah J. Maas. So he's pretty renowned and different
yeah.
in his style. His style is very kind of artistic. It's not, mm-hmm. which I love. It's not perfectly realistic, and I like that about his work.
Yeah.
So I was really excited about that. And then Monique said, "Well, I was thinking you know, perhaps we'll have Melina, you know, she'll be standing and like, you know, maybe there's wind and fire going around. Maybe her hair turns into fire. Maybe like she's even wearing the, or really her coin, you know, her talisman around her neck. And I was just like, yes, yes, yes. Like the, everything. I'm like, this is literally like everything. And then, so then we thought about the dragon eye iconography, you know, the jewelry and stuff she's wearing. And then of course we put the red dress because Julian's a red dragon. So that was kind of representing that. But I was blown away, though. I did not expect this sort of bronzy sheen that it has. Mm-hmm. It's so stunning. The paperbacks are exactly the same. I thought they have the exact same look, the exact same sheen that's on the paperbacks that come out actually next Tuesday. So I'm really excited about that.
Yay!
I know.
It caught my eye immediately. And even when I was scrolling through social media, when your like your Bloodsinger arcs are kind of out in the world at this point in time, the cover is stunning for that as well. Was it? I'm assuming the same sort of thought process went in for that. Was there anything different where you were looking at the second book and you were like, I want to do something a little bit different or go this kind of direction? Or were you still the same route?
Well, we worked a little bit with we had to consider Leela carefully. And I'll just say for those who you know this by the time you get to the end of book one, that she has been in Rome and for a while, and she's been enslaved by a very cruel person. And so her story starts darker than Melina's, which, I mean, I don't know. Melina's just starts pretty dark, but there's a lot more emotion in Leela's story. I will say I tried to be very careful about how I handled her past, and there's nothing on the page, you know, that hopefully will upset too many readers. But I do caution anyone, you know, to look at the trigger warnings, the content warnings for this book before you read it. But I think Leela's story is very special because she becomes empowered quickly. Her power is so cool, and how she's able to not only avenge herself, but then become part of the solution, not just, you know, passive in any way, but, you know, no, I want to do this. I want to free others. I want to be a part of, you know, this whole coup that's taking place. Like when she finds out what's happening, that there are already allies within the city, Romans within the city who want something new and different for their world, you know? So it was very exciting to write Leela. It really was, but it was very difficult. You know, it was, you know, there's some tearful moments for me as a writer. So, but I'm like, I know it sounds so crazy, but it's like, but I'm so proud of her. Like she's just, she's come a long way. And I think, so to go back to the cover, I'm sorry, I went away from the cover.
No, I love it.
I needed her to look like both. I didn't want her to look as vulnerable as Melina does. Melina has almost a vulnerable look. And I think that's because she's been on the outside looking in, and all of a sudden she's on the inside and she's much more frightened. Leela has been there this whole time. She is so strong. She is so just amazingly powerful in how she can like navigate this world, you know, amongst the dragons, amongst these monsters. And so I wanted the look of her on the cover to be kind of like that moment she feels the power and the magic that's inside her, you know, and it just kind of like, she's like,
she stands a little taller.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I did notice
she
that.
Does. Yes. Yeah,
not that she's more powerful than Melina, but she seems to have
she has
more,
a look in her eyes that's like
like
I'm
a
not,
bigger fire in the
yes,
in her heart.
Exactly.
Yes. That's what I felt when I saw it.
Right. It's like I'm not going to take any more, and you better look out.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, I'm done. Everybody else sit down.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Well, and speaking of Leela Bihari, know a smidge about her, but not too much. So, so we kind of know a little bit about now what journey she's going to go on. Can you tell us yet what a Bloodsinger is?
Sure. I have no problem telling you that. A Bloodsinger, so this was the gift, and I'll just go ahead and tell you guys this, that I have a myth at the beginning of each book. And so the second one is about the second sister, Riley, and these are actually from Greek and Roman myth. That is the name of Medusa's sister, one of her sisters. I've written it so that when she tastes blood, she can control that person. So she tastes the blood of a man. She can tell him whatever, and he has to obey.
That's incredible.
It's I can't wait. Because, I mean, you'll see why she's been unable. I don't want to spoil that too much, but... But I think you get the sample chapter was in the back of the first book. If you read that, you know that she's kind of being controlled so that she cannot use her powers. But when she does, y'all.
They better be ready.
Oh, yeah. It's
fun for them. Yeah.
It's so fun. This one has a lot more action, I think, than book one. I think it's, to be honest, I think it's a better book than Firebird. Firebird was... so exciting to write because it was a story I had in my head for a long time, but I wasn't expecting Bloodsinger. It definitely feels like my sort of like Empire Strikes Back, you know, I'm a Star Wars fan, you know, that middle, that second book where it's just like everything's going chaos, you know.
Well, I like to think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'd like to think that for an author, that is a goal to have, right? Like book one is good, but book two is better. Right. Because as you're writing, you change, your characters develop, things happen. Right. So I think that's amazing that you feel in your heart that book two is better. And I think the reviews that you're getting so far as well would agree. I'm not ready yet. So I can't say it yet, but I am.
Well, that's what was so funny to me. I read a couple. I try to stay away from Goodreads, but I knew that a couple of people had it. And that's the only place I can kind of check in and see, just kind of get a pulse of what people are thinking. And so I did peek in there and I was pleasantly surprised to see how many were saying this is better than the first book. And I'm like, yeah, it is. It really is.
Lots of good things being said.
I mean, personally, I think it is. You know, I think it's a better book.
Incredible. So we'll see. And so you may or may not be able to answer this question. It kind of goes with what you just said. So we know that Melina was able to protect herself in a way when she was going to be harmed by the other men around her.
Right.
Can we expect Lila to be able to, not right now in the beginning, but eventually be able to do that same thing?
Yeah. She's so badass, y'all. She's and worse. Yes. Yes.
Amazing.
Exclamation point.
Yes. And so when you're writing those scenes, right, and if you've read book one, you know that there are some seasons that were hard emotionally to push through. Even for myself, too, there was a time where I had to pause the audiobook and just take a second and say, it's not real. She's going to be fine. Like, but it's hard. Right? And again, your audiobook narrators did a great job. And that's what you're supposed to feel. You're supposed to be in the story. You're supposed to not be in the real world. That's the reason why we listen to these books and read these books, so that we can escape our reality and go to somewhere else and live someone else's story. And when I read a book, I am the FMC always, no matter what. So I was like, we're fine. Everything's fine. She's going to be okay. So what is it like for you as an author when you write those specific scenes? And for example, this is not a super spoiler, but like the one when they're at dinner with the emperor that one was wild.
It was a lot. I was totally expecting my editor to come back and look, you know, so this is the first traditionally published series I've done in a long time. And like I said, I do push myself a little bit in my books. And I was concerned about that scene. I was concerned my editor was going to come back and be like, I don't know this one. But I needed the readers, and it wasn't gratuitous. I needed the readers to see how bad and ridiculous truly was.
Yes. Agreed.
And again, it follows history because Caligula did this at dinner parties, except he wouldn't do it in front of everybody, but he would take somebody's wife and go to the back and then come back and critique her and talk about how it was and whatever. Right. So I took that idea and I just cranked it up a notch because they're dragons. You know, if they gave into that bestial side, how much worse would it be? Mm-hmm. You know? So yeah, it's difficult sometimes. I mean, it gets my heart rate going when I'm writing those scenes, for sure. I know that scene, like I said, I was nervous about it, but I was in it. Like, I was like, no, this is what he would do. This is what this, you know, total, you know, insane dictator would do. You know, he craves power. He's lustful. He's greedy. But most of all, he wants control and power. And that would be the ultimate way to control anyone, you know? And you'll see how it kind of translates a little bit in book two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So absolutely. I mean, I'm feeling all those things as well. I mean, again, I know they're going to be okay, but I know writing certain scenes, you know, I'll cry, you know, my heart will be up a little bit and I'll have to take a break and, you know, but I mean, that's what I love about writing. It takes me mm-hmm. into another world as well. Like, that's why I love it. You know, it gives me an avenue to speak about whatever I might be feeling or whatever's
right.
going on in the world, you know, or and cope with it the way I can, you know.
That scene was really rough. And then another one of the scenes was when any of the like men or soldiers mm-hmm. or warriors are in half skin. Yeah. I got a little nervous. And so I have a question for you. And this can be on or off record, whatever you're comfortable with. You described what half skin was in such great detail. I didn't get it. Me personally. I think other people did. I think it was just me. So I wanted to ask when I think of it, right? So they're mm-hmm. they have the horns.
Yes.
Right.
They're almost like humanoid.
The claws.
Mm-hmm. They're almost like humanoid, like their bodies are human, but they're covered in scales. They have the dragon tail, they have the wings, the horns. And I always imagine their faces are not normal. They're not full dragon, but it's like they're contorted and or
okay, all right,
malformed a little bit. Like their snout comes out a little bit, but they're not full dragon, you know. So they can still speak, but mm-hmm. and I do differentiate between those who are able to speak in half skin and those who cannot. Mm-hmm. Those who are more monstrous on the inside,
right?
Can't really tap into their humanity. In half skin.
Yeah.
So
that, okay, that makes sense. I was like, from the waist down, they're this. And then I was trying to picture it in my mind. And I imagined yeah. like a man chest, but without yeah. scales. So it was with scales.
Yes. It's like okay. their whole body's covered in scales. But, and it's just think of like a really, really tall, because I know I describe them as like 12 to 15 feet tall. Mm-hmm. So you have yeah. to imagine a giant, just monster of a humanoid creature. Mm-hmm. But, with the tail and the wings and the horns and the claws, you know.
Yeah, because it talks about their bones, like their bones are cracking to get to that form right. that they need to be in.
Yes.
So, and that, okay, that makes more sense. I was going to ask it because, and I said, you described it in incredible detail. My brain just could not, for some reason, and I even yeah. looked online. I was like, what is the half skin?
I know. I made it images? Up, so it's.
No, I love it. Well, I don't like AI, husband, but I was like, if there's an image out there that I could look I at.
My husband was the same way when he read it. He's like, I'm trying to picture this. I'm like, okay. And so, yeah, he struggled at first too. So, yeah, I get it. It's different because I made it up. It's not really a real thing. So, but
no,
I just
I
thought
love it.
That, you know, right. I just wanted this place between man and beast that mm-hmm. they could be. And like, that's how they were able to conquer the world. You know, they have their Death Riders flying in the sky and then they yep. have their officers in half skin. No human can go against them. Like there's no possible
there's
way.
No way.
So of course. Right. So, yeah.
Well, there's even rules for them as well, like when they can mm-hmm. do that and when they are not allowed to do that, when
right.
they're allowed to fly, not fly. Like they're right. they, even they are under more control than
yeah.
I think that they would like to be. Can we expect any art from like book 2 or 3 or even book 1 in the future of other characters that you have created?
As a matter of fact, I actually have created artwork for Julian. And he is on, I think did I have my banner at Romanacy? I think I had left that one at home. It's so sad. I have one of this 10-foot tall Julian. And then I'm commissioning an artwork of Leela and Trajan right now with Carlos, same artist.
Whoa,
I'm using the same artist.
So cute.
I'm gonna include it in the Packs for Midnight, the Midnight Release Party, and I'll have it at book cons as well. You know, I just want the couple together, you know, so
yeah absolutely. Yes, we want this. We want this art. Yay. Oh, it's just nice when I personally love like looking at art. I don't think I'm alone on that, but
yeah.
trying to put a picture in my mind of what mm-hmm. you think as the author the characters look at, right? Because every
look
time
like,
we read
right.
something, we create a different picture in our minds from the person that mm-hmm. is right next to us. So I think it's really incredible to really see what the author is seeing when she's writing the story or when he's writing the story.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm excited.
I'm so excited to see all the art and all the things and everything that's going to be going into book two. So speaking of book two, we talked a little bit about Leela. I want to talk about Trajan Tiberius. We met him in book one, right? So he is a dragon shifter. He's also Julian's best friend, and he's also part of the rebellion. So he is a pretty big deal. But when I read the description, I didn't see it coming, which a lot of times I usually can guess what's next, right? I was like, no, I know what's happening. And then I was like, hold on.
Wait, him?
I was like, really?
That amazing. Like, okay. That guy that's like clowning around in book one. Yeah. that's Trajan. So Trajan's family, and I mention it in book one, has their ancestors founded the Senate. And so for me, the Senate is maybe not at this point, obviously, but is going to be like where the people have representation, have a voice, right? And you'll see what happens with the Senate in book two. I can't say anything. But so I wanted him to have that connection to like the founding of the Senate, and that it's a source of pride for him and his grandfather Gaius and himself. And I needed a different character. I don't like to have the same personalities in my interconnected standalones. I try really hard so that it feels like a different couple, you know, because so this story is very different. And obviously Leela is very different from Melina, and Trajan is very different from Julian. Julian is very stoic. He's very guarded. He's very, you know, stoic, those kinds of things, where Trajan is more cunning and clever and talks easily. At the same time, he's calculating and scheming and strategizing, you know? And so that was a really fun character to write. He really was. So I hope you'll like him.
I'm excited to see what journey he goes on. And I think it's fun to do that. I think it's fun to go into different books in, you know, interconnected series and learn a new character altogether, as long as we know what we're going into, right? It's in the description. Right. You're telling us now. Yes. So we're not going to be surprised when we open page one and go, where's Julian? Because we know that it's happening.
Yeah, right. Correct.
So I think it's going to be amazing. I think it's going to be incredible. And it, I'm correct that this was planned the whole time, right? Because you obviously had the three sisters. So was Trajan always the number one choice?
Yes, always. I always had Trajan in mind. And also Leela needs someone, I think, who is a little bit more, you know, now I'm not going to say, we still have the toucher and die vibes, obviously. He's not, but I thought we needed someone who was just more open. More because Leela is the one who's guarded, you know, for good reason. She's been protecting herself for a long time. And so I think it's so interesting every time someone says in Firebird review or in reviews on Bloodsinger, it's a slow burn. I'm like, of course it is. Like, there can't be anything other in this kind of relationship, you know? So for me, it's like they trust comes hard for Leela, you know? Yeah. So I definitely needed a different kind of man for her.
Yeah.
And Trajan is really the perfect. And like already I knew who was going to be book three's couple as well. So I've known that for a while, but it just makes it. So when I'm writing romanticy, I need to see these sort of, I like to see these nuanced layers to each book where, you know, we have this thing, oh my gosh, like you're reading book two, you're like, oh my gosh, I remember when that happened. That's connected to this thing. Oh, I get it now. You know, like love, if I can do that well, I feel like I've been successful in telling a good story where you feel like this is a rich layered world where that those people are connected to the this and what's going on here, you know?
Yeah.
And so that it carries through to tell one long story, you know, just with different perspectives and different points of view. So
do we know or have we met our MMC for book three? I won't push you any further than that, I promise.
You will meet him. Yes. Okay. Yes, you have. I'm sorry. You have met him.
Okay. We have met him.
Already met him in Firebird.
I'm letting the gears turn. So I got to think about it and see. And
you met him in Firebird, and you'll see him again in Bloodsinger.
Okay. All right. I said I won't push you any further for that. I promise. I won't push you for spoilers, but I wanted to know, like, is it someone I should be looking out for that we have not seen a new face? But we have met him in Firebird, and we will meet him in Bloodsinger as well.
Yes.
Amazing. So what's going on next with you as an author and your writing? Well, you said that you submitted the stuff for, I'm assuming, book three, correct, today?
Yeah, Death Rider. Death Rider, the rough The yeah. first draft is written. It's with my editor. So I just finished that. I'm also going to be writing The Shadow Heir, which is book three in the Northgal series this year. And that will wind that series up as well. It's going to be a trilogy. I'm also planning to go back to Southern Charm, which is the spinoff of Stay a Spell for the Stay a Spell readers. It's so funny. Like I feel like I go from one extreme to the other. I'm going like really dark. And then I'll just like, let me just go back to New Orleans and play with the witches and the vampires and the werewolves. You know, like they're like all light and fun and yeah. funny. But it keeps my muse happy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also working on my next big project, and I can't say anything, but I will say this, that I'm so excited about it. It's, again, something I've had, just like Firebird was something I had been thinking about for many, many years. This other one is, I wrote the prologue probably 10 years ago and then stuck mm-hmm. it in a vault with my other things. And so I can't say anything yet, but I'm hoping by this summer, maybe we'll be able to make some announcements.
That's so exciting. I can't wait to see what it is. And did we say that the name for book three is Death Rider?
Death Rider, yes.
Ooh, okay. And that's out, right? Is that out?
I don't think it is.
I didn't know. I just wanted to make sure. I was like,
it's not out, but you know what? Go for it. I'm fine with you letting.
Okay, perfect. I heard it and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Now I'm really intrigued. I'm ready for book three.
Yeah. It was so fun to write. Oh, gosh. Exciting. Oh,
I'm excited for an epic conclusion.
Mom's the word. Not saying a word.
I can see you want to say it. I won't force you. I won't push. Don't worry.
So badly. So like, yeah. So I'm like one of these weird authors that I'm very linear in writing. So I'll think about scenes, but I won't write them until I get there. So had this final scene in mind since I wrote Firebird mm-hmm. and I've been waiting and waiting, literally the last chapter, you know, of the book. Gosh, it was so exciting to write.
Wow. I hope there's a celebration planned.
Yes.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it was. And it was difficult. Yeah. Death Rider. It was difficult for different reasons. It was just, mm-hmm. like you said, things going on in this world. You know, but I have a deadline and I have to focus. And so I was just focusing and trying to channel all of my, you know, outside world anxieties into what's going on in book three. But, mm-hmm. and it's just unique in that we start in almost a totally different, we start in a different place that's more peaceful. And then we go, you know, back into Rome. So,
yep,
where lots of things happen and I can't tell you.
And that's okay. That's okay that you can't tell us, right? We need to be surprised, right? We need to be able to go into the world not knowing exactly what's happening. Mm-hmm. But when we're going into book two and book three, is there anything you would like to tell your readers or maybe new readers coming into the series? Any information or things that you think that they should know or keep in mind as they're starting The Fire That Binds Journey?
I think I would like to say, you know, these are love stories. These are love stories, three love stories, but it's also a story about these sisters and mm-hmm. about sisterhood and about female empowerment. And that has been central to me this entire time. I've never wavered from that. And I just hope that new readers will understand that while I might be putting characters into very difficult situations and emotionally, physically, in all those ways, there's a reason behind it. Because how can we show what their suffering truly is unless the characters are feeling it, unless they are the ones who are actually having it, not just seeing it across the way, you know, or these other people are, we need to free them. No, they need to feel it. And so yeah. I'm hoping that people can, you know, keep an open mind and know that I tried to be very careful. I was very cognizant about what I'm writing about. We did have sensitivity readers for book two. And because
can I ask
wanted
what that is, I've not heard of that.
A sensitivity reader?
Yeah.
So that is someone who reads for anything that might come across harmful for the reader.
Oh, okay.
And so they will look for, you know, we might want to have a content warning about this, or you might want to rewrite this part because maybe that could, you know, for whatever reason, could be harmful to the reader. And I will say this, that I was so happy and proud and felt almost vindicated in a way that the sensitivity reader absolutely loved Leela and Trajan. And she said that I handled it very, their situation very well, Leela's situation very carefully. Actually, she said it better than I could. I'd have to go back and look at the letter that she wrote to me about it because she sends me like the breakdown of everything. So yeah, I think I would just like ask readers to understand that this really is about women rising above the patriarchy mm-hmm. and with their partners, with their friends, with their family, taking back their lives yeah. and freeing the people. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want people to know.
Yeah, that's incredible. Well, and from what I've read so far, obviously with book one, yes, these women go through these awful things, right? To grow and to learn. But you're also giving they have tools, thankfully, to help them overcome
yes,
that as well.
Exactly.
But it's not necessarily, no, I'm in this terrible situation. Oh, no, all these bad things are happening. I have to wait
that
for
that. I'm helpless.
To
right.
They're not helpless. Yeah. And they
right.
know that.
Exactly.
Right? Like Melina was never where she's like, oh, she was like, I've yeah. actually got, even to Julian. Julian's yeah. like, are you going to be okay? He's like, she's like, bro, I'm not worried. I'm going to yeah. be fine.
Yeah.
Right.
And so Leela feels that way over the course of the book in book two. But y'all, when you meet the heroine book three, oh yeah, she's total badass. Completely. It's just ooh. So fun. Oh my gosh. I just can't wait. Three, I just can't wait. I'm just excited.
It's very exciting. You should be excited. That's incredible. So yeah, when we're going into this series, keep an open mind. Read your yeah. content warnings, right? Our
absolutely.
Mental health matters.
Absolutely. And
the board.
And if any of those things bother you, please do not read it. I do not yeah. want anyone to be harmed by my writing. That is not my intention at all.
Yeah, which I think is a very fair statement. Like, know what you're going into. If you're ready, go into it. Enjoy yeah. this fictional story and these three love stories that yeah. are you know, really underneath all, where we are, again, smashing the patriarchy.
Right.
We're learning to find love through all of these trials and
through adversity and difficulty and right.
Yes, exactly. That's incredible. So I want to shift a little bit over to back to the audiobook. So we know that mm-hmm. it is going to be voiced by Blair Dade and Kale Williams. Can
yes.
we expect that for book three as
yes.
well? Or, okay.
Yeah. Perfect. Oh, yeah. They already asked me. I'm like, yes, please.
Yay.
They're awesome.
They did such a great job.
Yeah. And even though I know it's like three totally different heroes and three totally different heroines, I think when you have great voice actors like that and yeah. they just go well together, you know, yeah. I really wanted to keep that continuous, you know. Mm-hmm. I just can't imagine, honestly. It's Kale Williams, when I heard him read some of Julian's part for the audition, I was like, oh my God, that's him. That's literally Julian speaking. You know, I was just like, wow. But
that's
yes.
so surreal. What a surreal moment yeah. to hear it.
Yeah.
Like really
very
going
much.
From your mind and your brain and you're the only one that knows it to that hearing
yeah.
it like truly
and
in real
life. Speaking those words, I'm just like, wow. Yeah. Yeah.
That's
and what's great is, you know, he and Blair, they will be reading for all, you know, three. By the time mm-hmm. we get to book three, they'll still
right.
be reading all of those characters. And I don't know, it's really cool. I think they did a fantastic job and I can't wait to see what they do for mm-hmm. the rest of the series, the final book.
I think that's a great choice because even though there are new characters in book mm-hmm. two and book three, we have their voices set from book one, right? Like we know mm-hmm. how Julian sounds. So I love that Julian across the board, when we mm-hmm. see him and we get to like read parts where he is in, it's not changing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think
and
it also
between as well.
Correct. And I think it, you know, I think it helps in telling the story. Like they know the story, you know, they mm-hmm. know these characters now. So when they're carrying over to book two and then book three, they're totally immersed in it and they know the world.
Yeah.
It's, do you know what I mean? I feel
yes.
like they can tell a better story through their voices and their acting than if mm-hmm. I would start new and fresh with every book. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. They know what everyone's been through in book one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They were there the whole time.
So they
right?
know
so
what.
They know how to drag that emotion
right.
over with them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I think that was a wonderful choice. I'm glad yes. as a yeah. listener and a reader that you made that choice as an author, right? Because obviously you're free to make that whatever you want it to be because it's your book and mm-hmm. your story and your world. But I'm grateful that you made that choice. You had your midnight release party. And tickets are still available for that. And when you go to that midnight release party, you're going to get, so they're going to have some artwork, right? As you had mentioned before.
What else
can you say about that midnight release party? Because this will come out before the book comes out. So you, like, if you are listening to this and you want to go, that is at this point still available.
Oh my gosh, y'all, we're going to have, so I have commissioned quite a few customized gifts for those who come to the midnight release party. So we're going to have a customized tote bag, Cass Townsend with Iridescent, I think it's Iridescent Fairy Tale on Instagram. She has created she's created this beautiful metallic bookmark that will go in there. And the design from the bookmark will also be what's on the tote bag. I have, of course I have stickers.
Oh,
I have some dragon stickers and fabric stickers. But Tracy with Fire Drake Artistry is also going to be creating a beautiful woodwork piece. We have some just like fun little surprises in there. And then also Carlos is going to create the artwork for us. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's going to be... Yeah, I'm going all out. I'm like, if I'm going to finally have a midnight release party, my first ever, then I want everybody who comes to feel the extra
incredible love,
you know?
And where is the party at?
It's in downtown Lafayette, Louisiana at Cavalier House Books. You can, if you want to buy a ticket, you can get a ticket for the pre-order of the book that will get signed, of course. Or if you want to just come, you can get a general admission ticket as well and just come. And I think it's like $5 or $6 for the general admission ticket. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not too bad at all. And are you, during your party, are you in conversation with anybody? Like as far as like interview, things like that, who are you talking to?
I don't think so. I think they may do some Q&A, but we're mostly going to be like playing games and stuff. Like it's going to be
fun. Oh, that's
fun.
So fun.
Yeah. Like I am going to do some Q&A, you know, toward the end before the signing, but we're going to mostly be playing games and we have snacks and all kinds of stuff. It's going to be great. And, you know, cake, of course.
Oh, yes. You have to have cake. Yes. It's not a party without it, honestly.
Right.
And so is there a book tour coming up or what's
there
your next step after the release? And do you have locations chosen yet?
I do and I don't. We're still finalizing the schedule. I will say that these are places I've never been before. So a few on the East Coast, Northeast, Philadelphia area, and then possibly one or two stops in the Midwest. And then I'll also be at the LA Times Book Festival in California. And then I'll be heading back to a PolyCon. But I don't have all of the places exactly, so I don't want to say. But that will be posted on my Instagram very soon. So
amazing. So keep a look on her socials. And I'm sure we'll share it on our stories as well. So you guys can keep a look on our socials too.
Yeah.
And maybe Orlando will be on the list.
I
know you've been here before. But...
I know. I don't think it is for the book tour, but I'm definitely going again for Romantasy. So I'll be there for Romantasy.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll see you. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me
today.
Thank
you, Dallas. It was awesome. I appreciate
it. This was so much fun. I have been waiting to talk to you about this book for a hot minute. So I'm so excited to finally get all of my questions answered. So Bloodseeker, again, guys, is out on April 7th. If you'd like to go to her midnight release party, which has so many wonderful things, you guys are being spoiled.
Yeah. And I'm going to say one thing because I know that's going to have been released by the time you let this out. Walmart is actually going to have an exclusive if you pre-order through them. They are going to have a matted print of the Julian artwork, and it's really, really stunning with a dragon stamp on the matting. It's really pretty. So,
and that is for Bloodseeker, or is that for
Bloodseeker,
Firebird?
For Bloodseeker.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you pre-order it through Walmart,
you'll get the artwork. Yes,
I need that in my life.
I know.
I need Julian artwork in my life.
I literally just saw the little graphics today, and I was like, oh my goodness, Walmart.
Yeah.
So that's going to be exciting. Yeah.
We all need that in our life. And if you are going to grab that, if you truly are interested in that, my friends, please truly pre-order it, because once, from my personal experience, and if someone else has a different experience, let me know what I'm doing incorrectly. Because once it's released in Walmart and it's like the special editions are gone, it's so hard to find them.
Get
your pre-orders in. I will get my pre-order in so we can all have our beautiful books and our artwork of Julian.
Yes, a little free artwork. It's pretty. You'll see. You'll see soon.
I have no doubt. It's going to be beautiful. And I'm so excited to see it. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. This was
wonderful. April 7th, Blood Singer will be in our hands and your midnight release party is going to be incredible. And again, tickets are still available for that. So we'll probably put the link in our show notes. So if you are interested in going to her midnight release party, check out the show notes below. And you guys can go to that and have so much fun. That's going to be amazing.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure being here. I appreciate you having me.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.